afternoon and welcome to About Health. I'm your host, Rona Renner, here twice a month to explore different concepts of health and well-being. I'm a nurse, temperament specialist, author, and I'm a mother of four and grandma of four, all who teach me a whole lot about life and love. And yes, I worry about them, but I try my best to keep my fears and uncertainty at bay and do what I can to take one day at a time. You know, with the COVID-19 pandemic, anxiety about our health, safety, and future is high, but totally normal. For many people, it's hard to relax when there's so much uncertainty. Although I've talked to some people who are liking sheltering in place and having time to themselves and being able to avoid social situations. But this pandemic is particularly challenging if a person already suffers from anxiety or social isolation. You know, under normal conditions, anxiety disorders affect 40 million adults in the U.S., and it's thought to be the most common mental health problem in this country. Today on the show, we'll focus on uncertainty and ways to manage anxiety and build resilience. When we open up the phone lines in a little while, you'll be able to call us at 1-800-958-9008. You can let us know what questions you have and how you manage your anxiety, what helps, and what seems to make it worse. Joining me by phone is Jennifer Shannon. She's a licensed psychotherapist, a certified diplomat in cognitive behavioral therapy, and she specializes in anxiety. She has over 30 years of experience treating children, teens, and adults, and she's the author of 5 books, including Don't Feed the Monkey Mind, The Anxiety Survival Guide for Teens, and Monkey Mind Workbook for Uncertainty. And that's going to be published in August of this year. She's also coming out with a Kindle book sometime this month, in the next few weeks maybe, called The Anxiety Virus, 5 Essential Practices to Build Immunity to Uncertainty. Jennifer co-authors her books with her husband, Doug, who's a gifted illustrator. Jennifer and Shannon, welcome back to About Health.
Thank you for having me, Rona.
So glad you're with us. And I know so many people are living with a lot of fear and worry during these days. And you have a lot of experience regarding anxiety as a therapist, as an author and parent. I was looking through your website and I saw there was even a wonderful interview your daughter did talking about her own social anxiety related to school issues and how your books helped her. So maybe you could start off first telling us why you decided to specialize in anxiety as a therapist.
Anxiety is, like you said, it's sort of the common cold of mental health. So most we all experience anxiety to some extent. And for me, it was my own anxiety. My daughter had social anxiety. When I was growing up, I had a lot of social anxiety, which is, you know, shyness. In graduate school, I started having panic attacks. So I'm very well versed in understanding what anxiety is like from the inside. And when I learned psychotherapy, but specifically cognitive behavioral therapy, it was such an incredible tool in helping to understand anxiety and a different, almost paradoxical approach to it that was incredibly liberating and helpful. And I was so taken by the treatment methods with cognitive behavioral therapy that I became a specialist in that arena and in applying it to anxiety.
You know, maybe we should stop right here and tell our listeners what cognitive behavioral therapy is. It's something that a lot of people know about, but not everyone. And it's something I know in my work with parents, I've used a lot to help them stop yelling at their kids and figure out what's going on with them. But give us a little tutorial on what CBT is.
Okay, so CBT, cognitive behavioral, so it's what we think. And the thoughts that we have can create more anxiety. Let's take what this radio show is about, which is right now COVID-19 and the anxiety that's building up. So if we have a thought like, I must eliminate any chance that I might get sick and die. So that's a cognition. then we're going to be really anxious and contracted and fearful. And so helping to understand, okay, that thought is making us really anxious, and then what do we do as a result of that? What behaviors do we engage in if we're worried that we might get sick? And some are reasonable behaviors that are good things to do, but then we can it can turn into behaviors like checking too much, like we might be checking our bodies for any signs or symptoms of a disease, or taking our temperature several times a day, or it could be checking news feeds throughout the day to find out what the latest breaking news is. So our behaviors, while they're an attempt to try to neutralize anxiety, they often make the problem worse. And in cognitive behavioral therapy, what we're doing is we're saying, okay, we can go in there. We can't just snap our fingers and change how anxious you are. But if we change how we're thinking about a problem and learn to behave in different ways, then that can actually free us from anxiety. And that's how cognitive behavioral therapy works. So, for example, with fears about the coronavirus, if we say, okay, the thought is I have to be certain that I'm not sick, it's more of I can take reasonable precautions, which can influence whether I get sick or not, but I have to let go of complete control, that there's things that are beyond my control. And while we learn to accept the uncertainty, we can relax into it a little bit. And then resist urges, behaviors that might be what I call safety strategies that are actually making the problem worse. So we're becoming much more like vigilant to what our bodies are doing if we're constantly checking our body or our temperature or emailing or looking up symptoms on the internet. So cognitive behavioral therapy is really about changing those things.
That's a good start, and people are welcome to call in a little bit with questions they have. But in alignment with this, you were telling me a story which I thought was another good example of how sometimes those thoughts and our anxiety and how we get revved up in relationship to them, how they can make things worse. You were telling me about a mother of two young children, and she was on a mission to get flour to make cookies. I think that's another good example. Tell us about that.
Yeah, so it was a client I was working with, and now she had anxiety prior to this, but of course, it makes our anxiety much worse. And you don't have to have had an anxiety disorder to be feeling very anxious at this time. It's normal and natural. So this woman had, she said every time she would leave to go home, she'd think, oh my gosh, what am I missing? And she wanted to make chocolate chip cookies with her girls. So she already knew that there was a shortage of flour, but she was determined she was going to make these chocolate chip cookies. And so she went to the first store, Safeway, and sure enough, they empty shelves when it came to flour. She went to another store, empty shelves. Now, as she's doing this, she's getting more anxious. Her, you know, chest is getting tight, her stomach's tense. And she goes to the third store, I think it was Target, still no flour. And she ended up feeling stressed, anxious, overwhelmed, and helpless. So the mindset was, I'm only safe if I can make sure that I get the thing that I want, flour, so that I can do something enjoyable with my girls. And I said, okay, well, really what we need to be stockpiling right now is flexibility, resilience, and creativity. I said, what if every time there was a shortage or a problem caused by the changes in our life, that whoever could come up with the most creative solution to that could get a marble, and you put these marbles in a jar and you create a flexibility jar. And so she emailed me later and she says, okay, I went home, no flour, and we came up with Rice Krispie treats, which just takes marshmallows and Rice Krispies. She was able to do that, and she was like, first marble in the jar, Rice Krispie treats. So that ability to say, okay, instead of saying it has to be the way it was, if it's not the way it that was, what can we do to creatively deal with that? And when we change our stance towards what's happening right now, then that can help us relax a little bit into it and use our higher brain to really think through problems, as opposed to just reacting and going in this, you know, fruitless hunt for flour.
Right. Great example. And I think it reminds me of how easy it is to get into that fight and flight place, you know, when our cortisol system goes up and our nervous system gets really activated. And I know for myself, I have to do some real work, you know, usually breathing, to get myself out of that state. But maybe you could explain a little bit in terms of anxiety, what's going on with our nervous system when we get into that cycle that sometimes leads also to a panic attack, but can just also be very heightened sense of anxiety. What's going on in our brain?
Right. So there's that small part of our brain, the amygdala, sort of the base of the skull, and it's often referred to as the fight-flight center of the brain. And because that part of our brain is so primitive and instinctual and highly reactive, that I refer to it as the monkey mind, which is what I write the books about, is don't feed the monkey mind. So this reactive part of ourselves, this fight-flight response, which is fantastic in imminent threat situations. So when there's something that you need immediate reaction time to, that part of our brain is great, and that it triggers the sympathetic nervous system, which is, you know, muscles tense for action to fight off or flee from danger. And the problem with chronic anxiety, and certainly with COVID-19, we've got a situation that it's not going to be resolved anytime soon. So there's so many uncertainties. There's so much that we don't know, and that can create just this, we're acting, our amygdala is fired up, and it's sort of like having a hyperactive monkey mind that's sort of jumping around, woo-hoo-hoo-hooing at, and, you know, the latest thing that we hear on the news, or the latest sore throat, the little scratch in our throat, or, you know, stock markets. There's real concerns. I'm not saying they're not real concerns. They're incredibly real concerns. But when we're activated in this sort of as if it's imminent threat, we need to learn how to tame that part of our nervous system. And luckily, we are equipped with another part of our nervous system, which is the parasympathetic nervous system, and that's the relaxation response, or what I call the rest and digest. That ability our bodies have to tap into that, we have it in our nervous system. We just need to learn, how do we tap into it? What do we do to help quiet the monkey mind and the sympathetic nervous system, that fight flight, and how do we really spend time, and we have to be more intentional with helping us turn on our rest and digest nervous system.
Good, and we'll definitely get to some of those ways to shift that. And let me just give out the phone number. You're listening to About Health. I'm your host, Rona Renner, and I look forward to taking your calls. I'm here today talking with Jennifer Shannon. She's a licensed psychotherapist and a certified diplomat in cognitive behavioral therapy, specializing in anxiety. She has over 30 years of experience treating children, teens, and adults, and she's the author of many books, and there's one coming out in August, and also a Kindle book this month called The Anxiety Virus, 5 Essential Practices to Build Immunity to Uncertainty. The number you can call is 1-800-958-9008. That's 800-958-9008. So what types of anxiety are there? Maybe you could just, again, give a broad stroke on the different types of anxiety that people experience.
Yeah. So the Kindle book that I'm writing, I'm talking about the different anxieties. So there's agoraphobia, of course, which is sort of a fear of being trapped in a situation that we're not safe in. And right now, you know, so much of us are trapped in our home and not being able to get out or do the things that we normally do. And of course, there's panic. So, you know, panic attacks, and some of us are experiencing heightened senses of anxiety in our bodies, which manifest very physiologically. So rapid heartbeat or tightness in our chest, dizziness, lightheaded, those kinds of things. There's social anxiety. So that what I wrote my first book on, which is the fear of being judged or criticized by others. Now, social anxiety, too, and we can get more into it, but that's certainly up with COVID-19 as well, because when we go out, everybody has different kind of, even though there's rules and regulations, we all have different interpretations of how to do that. How much are parents allowing the grandparents to have contact with the grandkids? What's the right thing to do?
Right.
There's a lot more.
Yeah.
Definitely up. Generalized worry, which is you can worry about your health, finances, other people. That's certainly generalized anxiety. There's so much right now to be anxious about. So really, pretty much all the different types of anxiety that we have are being highlighted by what's happening in the world right now.
Right. I mean, I was thinking about people who suffer from obsessive compulsive disorder, which is a piece of anxiety. And, you know, so here, you know, you might have someone who is getting themselves to not, you know, wash their hands a whole lot or not clean their house compulsively. And now we're saying, oh, we need to do this. That must be really hard.
Yeah, I had a client, so that was one of my first emails when the crisis hit, and I had stopped treatment with her probably about 6 months ago. She made huge progress. She had contamination fears with OCD, and we had her do exposure, so the cognitive behavioral part was, you know, the thought was, oh my gosh, what if I just touched the couch in Jennifer's office, and now I have germs and I could get sick? And then she would touch the couch and then not wash her hands and tolerate that feeling that maybe she had germy hands and that she could get sick. And that what happens when you just tolerate is the anxiety will dissipate without giving into the urge to wash your hands. Well, here we have this, and we're, you know, all of us are behaving in rituals that are even above and beyond what a lot of people with contamination fears do. So she emailed me, says, okay, what am I supposed to do now? And she said her anxiety was way, way up. So what I talked to her about, and this is an underlying aspect of how do we do things without falling into the anxiety trap, or what I call feeding the monkey mind. If we're doing something, washing our hands to make sure we don't get sick, it's like we're feeding that part of the brain, that highly reactive brain, and it's insatiable, so it's going to want more, and there's never enough certainty that you wash your hands to the point where they're not germy anymore. So with her, and this is true for all of us, is I said, okay, obviously you're going to be needing to wash your hands and use hand sanitizer. That was one of the things too. I'd said no hand sanitizer. This was before when I was treating her OCD. Now we need to be using hand sanitizer. So I said, okay, when you do those things, what you need to do them with is to, as you wash your hands, to remind yourself that you're doing what you can, but it doesn't eliminate uncertainty. That you need to still be able to tolerate the uncertainty that, did you wash your hands enough? Did you get every last germ off your hands? You don't know and you can't know. And how to learn to rest in uncertainty is really what frees us from anxiety. So although we may be doing things that we need to do to keep safe, we can still learn to rest in the uncertainty, which is what gives us true peace and confidence that we can cope with whatever happens.
Resting in uncertainty, you know, that's something everyone is figuring out how to do. And I think we all have our different strategies. And if you do have some strategies that you want to tell us about, feel free to give us a call at 800-958-9008. Tell us what helps you and what challenges you have as well. We'd really like to hear from you. And I know that one thing I want to talk a little bit with you about, Jennifer, is that people don't respond well to someone else saying, now just relax. Just relax, you know, everything's okay, just relax. And even a person telling themselves, like, I just got to relax, you know, like, that's not a great strategy, but it's something that people hear. And so I'd like you to address that. Why doesn't that work?
Yeah. Don't worry, be happy, just relax. Yeah. Well, so with relaxation, one of the reasons that relaxation techniques, for the longest time, I did not teach any relaxation techniques in the cognitive behavioral therapy, because all the clients I was getting had already been taught relaxation techniques and they weren't working for them. The reason that relaxation techniques can backfire is if, for example, you have a rapid heartbeat and you're thinking, oh, this is terrible. Maybe it's a heart attack or maybe it's a panic attack. Either way, it's horrible. And you try to relax and attempt to desperately get rid of this feeling that you're having in your body. What you're doing then is you're actually resisting and fighting what's happening. And for relaxation to be more effective is learning to relax into discomfort that we're having physiologically, feelings that we're having, anxiety that we're having in our body, is really learning how to open up to the discomfort or when I teach therapists how to do this, I said, we need to teach our clients how to get good at feeling bad. And I know that sounds like a bad, that sounds hard, but that's the key to really is how do we learn to relax into the discomfort that we're having? So that's one key element in terms of why relaxation doesn't work and what to do instead. So yes, we are still using techniques, which is sort of opening and breathing and body-based type of things, but it's much more about welcoming the discomfort that we're experiencing right now, as opposed to resisting it. If we're resisting it by trying to relax, and there's so many things we do, Rana, that are trying to get rid of negative emotion, and usually they're not good for us. You know, alcohol, substances, distraction, there's so many things we do, and that if we can learn to tolerate more what we're experiencing, then we're going to learn to relax in a way that is, again, sort of like resting in uncertainty, relaxing into discomfort, that we can get much more grounded that way, and we're not desperately seeking ways to get rid of the discomfort we're experiencing.
So that really makes sense to me, what you're saying. And, you know, I think about mindfulness, and the whole idea is accepting what I'm feeling in the moment and making that be okay. You know, if I'm feeling sad that I can't see my daughters right now during this time, I have to not just push that away. I have to be okay with that sadness, but then not get lost in it. And again, for me, that's where breathing often helps to kind of shift what I'm feeling. Maybe you can tell us, for folks who are listening and are dealing with whether they have anxiety that's been diagnosed or just the anxiety of this time, tell us, how do you help people relax into that?
Right. I mean, coming to the body is always good. So in the practices that in my books, I actually have practices which will actually trigger the anxiety. So it's much better to say, okay, I'm going to learn to relax with anxiety by trying to purposely get a little anxious first. So you can pick a worry that you're worried about. And then once you have that worry, like, oh, could this tickle in my throat be, you know, the virus? Okay, then when you have that thought, what happens in your body? And we're always going to have a physiological response to our thoughts, our anxious thoughts. And this is coming home to the body and what's happening right now. So you can do a quick body scan, like notice the key areas, which would be your jaw, your throat, your chest, heart, shoulders, your stomach. And noticing as you tune in, where do you feel some contraction, constriction, or you might feel things like rapid heartbeat. And then when you come to notice that, instead of trying to get rid of it, sometimes I have people take their hands and open the hands so that the palms are facing upwards to take a welcoming or accepting stance to what's happening in our bodies right now. And that when we have a negative emotion or contraction, it doesn't mean that something's wrong in the moment. It means we're scared. And it's okay for us to be scared. It's natural and normal for us to be scared. And so when we feel this way, then to use the breath. I do use a lot of breath, which is breathing into the area. So for example, if it's your heart or chest area that feels really contracted, allow it to feel contracted, but use your breath to breathe into the contraction, opening up to it, sort of softening and surrendering to the contraction that you're experiencing right now in this moment, that there's truly nothing wrong with how you're feeling. Whatever you're feeling is okay. Coming into it, coming into the body, and breathing in to open and just breathe to give space to it. Maybe it's sadness that you, like you said, you can't see your grandkids, or my kids are all in Washington State and I missed the twins' birthday, which was last month, and that makes me sad. So then it would be like coming to my body, where do I feel the sadness, and breathing into it. It's okay to feel this, it's natural to feel this, and opening up to that feeling. And when we do that, when we can open up, we can, it helps us metabolize our emotions. So, you know, sort of like if we had food that was sitting in our stomach and we're tensing up against it, we can't digest the food. So the emotions are the same thing. Open up to our emotions, because then we can metabolize them and they can move, because everything does change. Emotions change. Situations change.
I feel better and more relaxed just listening to you. So thank you for that, Jennifer. That was great.
Welcome. My pleasure.
We're going to take a call now. We have Taylor with us from San Anselmo. Welcome. You're on About Health, Taylor.
Hi. I just was wondering about this phrase "monkey mind." Where does that come from? Isn't it like thousands of years old, that phrase?
Yes, it does. I didn't coin the phrase. It is something I'm not sure exactly where it originated, but I think it's been around for thousands of years. I think ancient sages, and this idea that the monkey mind is sort of going from branch to branch. And I think of it as the monkey mind is going from one uncertainty or one fear to the next, and it's constantly in pursuit of eliminating threat and seeking opportunity. So it's this very, you know, it's like jumping. And the idea of when I talk about it fits so well with the kind of work that I do, because this mind that's jumping around, how do we tame it? What do we do? And when how do we tame it is to not react out of that part of our brain. And this is really an interesting time too. When I, you know, was reading about the meat shortages. So here's an example of my monkey mind. I'll give you an example. So I'm 95% vegetarian. But I had the strong urge to go out and get me some meat. It was like, okay, there's meat shortage. There's people lining up for this. I've got to go do something. That's the monkey mind. It's this urge to eliminate threat and seek certainty, even though it's not something I need or want. And I can, and for me, it's nice to just say, oh, that's my monkey mind, because then I can take a step back. I don't have to give in to the urge. I can recognize it for what it is. So that's an example of my monkey mind. But no, I didn't coin the phrase. It's been around for a long time.
It's an old, old Chinese phrase. It's a Buddhist term. You know, I think of it as meaning, you know, if I'm sitting and trying to meditate, I have an unsettled mind or a restless mind. Mm-hmm. Yeah. And so it's used a lot in the Buddhist tradition. Taylor, did you have anything else you wanted to ask or add? Maybe she's not there anymore. Let's take another call. Mm-hmm. We have Andrew now calling from Southern California. Hi, Andrew.
Yeah, greetings, Nurse Rona.
Hi there.
I'm wondering what you and your guests think about this. While we can't eliminate all uncertainty from our life, I think there's one uncertainty that we can eliminate that most of us are dealing with and that we're not even recognizing in our lives, that are causing a constant state of stress and living in fear. And that's the fact that humans are a tribal species. We evolved that way. And while we're not living that way now, I think it's programmed into our hardwiring that we need in our home, in our village, which would be, I guess, our neighborhood and our workplace, We need our tribe, and we need a tribe that we're comfortable with, and that's a thing of us. And we need that because we can't survive alone in the woods or by ourselves. We don't have the ability to survive by ourselves. And even though we can do that now, we can go to the store and get our food. We have water flowing. We turn on the switch, and we get heat. And we got a home for protecting us. It's still hardwired in us to be tribal. We need a group of people that we're comfortable with, that we can check in on a regular basis, be recognized, be heard, and feel safe. And I think without that, once again, we're living in a state of fear, which causes a constant state of stress, fight or flight, etc. And for me, the solution for that is creating a tribe in our home, in our neighborhood, in our workplace, that we check in on a regular basis, and we practice living cooperatively, making decisions together, accepting each other, having physical contact. And even if we're living alone, perhaps we can create that now with the new technology online or with our neighbors or in the people in our apartment building, et cetera, et cetera. So I'm wondering what you think about that.
Well, first I want to say, Andrew, you know, as you were speaking, I got the chills. And what you said really, really touched me because you're absolutely right that we're programmed. It's our hardwiring to be in a tribe and to be with others. And the way that most of us live is not really how we're meant to live. So, you know, you've called in before and you're always saying things that are very wise. So I want to first off thank you for that, because it's not the way we should be, and so many of us are feeling that. You know, I hear so many people saying, "I just want to touch my child," you know, who's not around, or "I just want to have a dinner where we could all be together at the table." Jennifer, why don't you respond to Andrew as well?
Yes, Andrew, I agree. I think you said it really well. Is how do we create more? We are pack animals. How do we create more of our tribe around us, even when we're not in physical proximity to them? In the Don't Feed the Monkey Mind, say there's two core fears, and one is of death or the loss of our extreme loss of health, and the other is the fear of being kicked out of the tribe, of not being part of not belonging. And so those are our core fears, and they're getting challenged right now. So I think what you said in terms of connecting in the ways that we can, and even with, you know, with not even with KPFA, you know, this is a family. Andrew's called in before. There's people who, you know, tune in to you twice a week. There's that sense of, okay, there's some consistency, there's some connection there. The other aspect that I think is really about this sort of tribal pack animals, I read someplace that we have not done well with these kind of influences in the past, where we actually can turn against one another. And that, I think, is, again, the monkey mind. So it's like this, I know for me, when I go out on a walk to walk my dog, I'm concerned. The other day I was walking along, I had my mask on, and I sneezed. And I was like, uh-oh, do people think I shouldn't be out here? Like, I just sneezed. Am I contagious? I'm 6 feet away. I have my mask. Is that enough? Are people judging me? So that's a normal fear to come up, like, are we doing something that other people might judge us for? And then come back, for me, the practice is come back to self-compassion. Hey, I'm doing the best I can. I'm taking the precautions I can. I can't control whether people judge me. I can relax into it and again try to smile with my eyes as I'm walking by with my mask. And another area is judging others. We can fall into becoming very judgmental, and this has happened to me too. So on my path, when people are coming too close or they're not moving off to the side, I get angry. Like, hey, come on, social distancing here. Why aren't people following the rules? Well, we're all humans. We all have different ideas of what we're comfortable with and what's safe. And this has always been true. So a big part of being out in public is accepting, okay, there's going to be different people, different rules, different ways of doing that. And if I can relax into that, then I'm going to be less reactive.
Yes, thank you. Thank you for that. And, you know, one of the things that Andrew made me think of also is that when you can reach out and be in collaboration with other people, it reduces your anxiety. So you know, some person in Berkeley decided to raise money to get the restaurants to bring food to the local hospital workers here in the East Bay. And, you know, I donated some money for that and then followed up with what they were doing and saw pictures. And I noticed how it helped me feel more ease. And so, again, sometimes when we can do for others, even if we can't do it in person, it really can change things. And then there's also a group of people who feel really isolated and are sitting home frightened at times. And we have to think, who can we reach out to so that they know that someone is thinking of them? You're listening to About Health. I'm your host, Rona Renner, and I'm talking with Jennifer Shannon. She's a psychotherapist and author. You can call, ask her questions about any type of anxiety that you're feeling now and perhaps you felt in the future. The number is 800-958-9008. Let's talk a little bit more about this idea of stocking up on resilience and flexibility. You know, you told me, Jennifer, that you faced a tragedy a few years ago. You lost your home in the fire in Santa Rosa. And I can only imagine that that raised so much anxiety in terms of the loss and the uncertainty of your future. How did you build your resilience in the face of that?
Yes, and I'm still building. We're not back in our home yet. Hopefully this month in May that we'll actually, the home will be rebuilt. So it has given me a tremendous challenge in terms of I've lived four different places and I'm a homebody. I like to just settle down and be in one place. So it really has given me incredible opportunity of building more of that flexibility, resilience. I will say that one of the first things that I did after the fire that first month where I really was in shock was what I'm talking about, which I'd already been doing as a practice. I'd said that I had panic disorder way back in graduate school. So I'd learned and practiced these ways of kind of coming back to the body and opening up to what is. But every day, twice a day, I would lie down on the floor wherever I was, and I would just come back to my body and just feel what it was feeling. I would take time to do that. And that really helped me to back into, even though everything, I didn't know what was going to happen. I'd lost everything. Everything was overwhelming. I mean, I remember the first time I went in to buy underwear and I just stood in Macy's and cried. I was like, I have to make these decisions. I can't do it. And that was actually Andrew's call in terms of the tribe. The woman just came up and just picked them out for me. That was just such a People were amazing after the fire in terms of the communal support that they gave because it made them feel like they were engaging and helping. So that was beautiful. So being out, getting support, but coming back to my body was huge and just really taking the time to say, okay, what's happening, and take time to really relax into whatever it was that I was experiencing. It's not that it made the anxiety go away, but it did really help me get through that first month.
Yeah. There's a lot to do to be resilient to so much fear of uncertainty.
There is. And a part of that also the work that I'd already been doing prior to the fire did help me to accept the uncertainties of, you know, we're moving back into the home, which is in a Fountain Grove, which is a fire zone. So we're doing what we can to keep safe with vegetation, completely changing landscaping. We have even bigger fire, sprinklers in the house. So doing things that we can. But does that eliminate the possibility that there could be another tragedy? It doesn't. And if I can learn to relax into that and accept that, then I can feel more peace, confidence, and joy in my life. And so that's that, you know, giving into urges of, if I try to, after the fire, when I would smell smoke, like with cooking or something, I'd want to immediately go, I've never been a stove checker, but I had these urges to check the stove, like, well, what if there's a fire? What if I left something on?
Right.
And I did know better than to give into those urges. That's the monkey mind going, woo-hoo-hoo-hoo-hoo-hoo, danger, danger, you need to be certain that this doesn't happen again. When I respond to that urge, I'm responding out of that fear-based place. So I'm feeding that part of myself. I knew I needed to resist those urges, breathe into the fear in my body, let it metabolize. And when the house didn't burn down, then it was like, okay, gain that confidence back. I don't have to engage in these checking behaviors to make sure I'm safe. So I used all the strategies that I use with my clients daily, and that helped a lot.
Well, let's talk a little bit. Thank you for that. And I wish you a lot of blessings for moving into your home.
Thank you.
But let's talk about that breathing, because I often will tell people, you don't have to do anything fancy. You know, there are a lot of different strategies if you Google, you know, deep breathing in terms of how a person can breathe. But I often say, you know, through your nose, take in three breaths, hold it, and then through your nose or mouth, breathe out four breaths, to the count of four, and then breathe in to the count of three and breathe out to the count of four. And then some people want to expand that, breathing in a little longer, breathing out a little longer. What's your sort of go-to general breathing technique that anyone who's listening can use if they're starting to feel the fear and want to shift that?
Right. You know, I don't have any specific, and there's different things, and I'll use a lot of different things. Sometimes I'll use breathe in to the count of six, breathe out to the count of, or breathe into three, breathe out to six. You know, sometimes it's counting the breath. Sometimes it's just, so there's, it's not that there's a technique and this is the technique that'll make, you know, have the best results. It's for, and for me, it's really the intention of the breath. And the intention of the breath is to come back to the body. So we're always breathing, but we're not aware of it. So we come to the breath is just coming back to the body. And then the intention of the breath for me is I usually use it, breathe into the areas that you're feeling the most discomfort. So using the breath as a way of opening and expanding, softening and surrendering to what's happening in our body right now. So those are, to me, the key elements of the breath and how we do that. We could do that slow breath. We could do that. Sometimes it's like do it with a quick breath. Breathe in, you know, more quickly and just kind of breathe into discomfort that way. So there's different ways of doing that.
Uh-huh. Okay, good. Yeah. And sometimes I know that it really helps me to put one hand on my belly and one on my chest, and I could feel my belly expanding and breathing from the more a more deep place in me sometimes can really hurt, but help.
That's what we're after.
That's right. We're not after hurt.
We're hurting and we want some help.
Exactly. But I think it's important for people to know that there's not a magic way of doing it, but that in fact, I think it takes about, 6 seconds for your cortisol levels to start to calm down once you've started breathing. Let me take another call. And if you want to join us, it's 800-958-9008. Let's talk to Craig now in Mariposa. Hello, Craig.
Hi, Nurse Rona. It's been a while since I've called in.
So well, nice to hear your voice. Thank you.
It's so nice to have you on the air. But before I get to the reason I called in, I just want to ask if you ever got an email that I sent you about Brené Brown being on 60 Minutes a month ago? I guess you never saw that. Okay.
No, I didn't. Oh,
I went to your website and used that email address, but I had a feeling maybe you never got it. Okay.
I'm sure I would have written back, but thank you. I love Brené Brown, and I do follow her a lot and listen to her talks. She has a lot to teach us.
So you didn't see when she was on 60 Minutes a month ago?
No, I didn't.
Oh, okay. See, I thought of you right away when I learned that she was going to be on.
Oh, thank you. Okay. I love getting good emails like that. Thanks, Craig.
I'm wondering what. I wanted to send you something, and so say I wasn't sure about your email address there, and I wanted to send you another email about people using breast milk, supposedly. Because of the antibodies and during the crisis, crazy stuff going on.
Oh, interesting.
Yeah,
interesting. You could always email me at nurserona@kpfa.org.
Okay, I'll do that too.
Now that you're saying that, I have some frozen breast milk from my daughter-in-law in the freezer. So hey, I'll have to read your article. Go ahead. Tell me what you're calling in.
Yeah. So here I am. I'm calling you from Mariposa. And there was a, I'm going to call it wonderful, in quotes, article in the LA Times yesterday. Made Mariposa look like this ideal, tiny little rural community where everybody's really got their act together in regards to the pandemic. Well, our local health people, they've got their act together, but most of the people who live here don't. And that's why I'm calling. There's a strong element of anxiety here all the way around. My wife and I are both in our late 60s, so we're being very careful. I haven't been to town for a good while myself. When my wife goes to town, she wears a mask, and she has been doing this for weeks already, many weeks. But hardly anybody else around her does. And here's what happens. So she went into a Rite Aid store about a week ago. Big corporate chain. They sent out rules about how to have social distancing. It's marked in the store, but no, there's 10 people lined up right next to each other. None of them wearing masks. Only the person behind the counter, I believe, was wearing a mask. My wife just got very upset and turned around and left. but when she went out the door, she took out her cell phone to take a picture just to kind of document it. Well, that provoked someone in line. When she got in her car, he immediately ran out and took a picture of her in her car in retaliation or something. I don't know. Crazy.
So sorry,
and,
Craig.
And,
yeah.
And then the next thing, I'll wrap this up quickly. She was at the local, we have one local supermarket. Okay. Again, nobody was wearing masks. We had zero cases in this county until a couple of days ago. Now we suddenly have 13. But so nobody around here was wearing masks, hardly anybody, I should say, except very enlightened people like us. There's a few of us. Normally she goes to town and feels happy when she comes back because she saw some friends at the store. Well, nothing like that. Instead, there were two women who were very annoyed to have to be in the company of someone who was wearing a mask, and they were making little obnoxious comments. Then when she went out, she finished shopping, went out to the car and in the parking lot, and there's some guy, a big bully type, gets out of his big, huge pickup truck and very purposely goes...
That's horrible.
So in other words, what's going on here?
Yeah.
They're seeing her wearing the mask, triggers their anxiety, and they react like that. My wife has anxiety about going to town because she's going to encounter that.
Well, Craig, it's a really that's a really tough situation because you're clearly doing what is being recommended by the medical community. And again, the recommendation is if you can't be 6 to 10 feet, I say 10 feet is even better, apart, then masks are required, like in a store. So one of the things, and we'll move this to Jennifer in a minute, but one of the things I would suggest is to actually talk to a local supervisor and see if there's... never mind, I shouldn't even go there, huh?
This is Trump country.
What about... I lived in Merced for a while, so I know Mariposa a little bit. What about the local TV station? Are they interested in doing any PSAs about what's going on with the virus and how important?
They don't cover Mariposa much. That's why it was such a surprise to see an article in the LA Times. But
I would go to the news if you could, because they're the ones who could do stories about how we're going to keep this virus from spreading in Mariposa, who's doing so well but may not be doing so well anymore. But in terms of your wife's anxiety, I think this is a really good example, Jennifer, to talk about when it's based on reality and it's based on being bullied and it's based on people not being compassionate towards others. So what do you want to say to Craig, Jennifer?
I think this was that people haven't always behaved well in pandemics in the past, and that there can be a lot of kind of division. I think that where we come from, is Craig actually said anxiety. So if somebody's wearing a mask and we don't think it's necessary, then we feel sort of alienated by them wearing a mask. Like, why are you doing that? Are you saying that, are you scared of me? I'm healthy. And so that sense of that more of that tribal pack mentality, that if somebody's acting in a different way, then it's like they're not part of our tribe or our pack. And so that kind of we can be harsh and judgmental towards them and vice versa. So there's, I think, a lot of room when we're anxious to become quite judgmental both ways. Like I said, on the path, I felt that people might be judging me, and I felt judgmental of other people who weren't taking enough of a distance. And then coming back to like, okay, we're all afraid. That's the truth. We are all afraid. And there's different ways of how that manifests. I think that we have to figure out for ourselves, what are we comfortable with? And we never have been able to control other people. So we don't, you can maybe do what you can in terms of educating, but we can't control that. So we can control what we do. So how do we take care of ourselves if other people are doing things that don't make us feel safe or comfortable? How do we create more distance? What do we do creatively? Flexibility, if we can't go to the store because it's not safe, how do we do that? And coping in that way. And I would say, too, that if in Mariposa, and I hope it doesn't happen, but if there were more incidents of illness, then that's going to bring people together in a way of like, okay, wait, now we are threatened and we do need to do these things because it feels very real. So that would shift it. So sometimes fear can actually help people adhere to rules and follow rules because we're so afraid that we might get sick. But if you're not afraid, then it's harder to follow those rules if it doesn't feel like, doesn't make any sense to do so.
Yeah, and I think what you said before too, Jennifer, about when something happens that raises up our anxiety, that we have to also then problem solve. And mm-hmm. and we have to problem solve. So part of the role for Craig and his wife is also to problem solve here and say, okay, how are we going to get our needs met at this time? How are we going to get the food we need? Do we have to order that in and actually stay away for a while? You know, so really figuring that out based on a real fear and also not letting it get into anxiety. Thank you so much for calling, Craig. We have a few minutes left to be able to take more calls, 800-958-9008. And I got a message from someone asking about the news and really worried about how much news to watch and how much not to watch. She wants to be able to watch the news to know what's going on, and she also notices that the news makes her more anxious. What advice do you give people on that?
A very common issue. And it, you know, with news too, I have to think of what do we tend to read about or see images of. It's going to be more of the kind of what bleeds leads. So, you know, I don't know how many times in my local paper I've read about the forklifts and the body bags and, you know, things like that, which are disturbing images and think ways that we're thinking about it. So the news can be very activating to the monkey mind. So that sympathetic nervous system. What I suggest to my clients, and I do it myself, is to have scheduled times at which I look at news. So I've turned all my notifications off on my phone. I'm no longer getting breaking news because my phone would be buzzing throughout the day of breaking news, you know, constantly. And that creates that heightened state of anxiety. So I turned off my notifications, and then I read the paper in the morning, and I'll check on any other news in the evening. So make it on scheduled times. And resist urges to check news. Really, one of the, you know, the cognitive behavioral therapy, the behavioral part, and this is very important, I call it curbing the urge. So what your urges are, when I said that, when I read about the meat shortage and they had this urge to go out and buy meat, resisting urges are when after the fire, not checking the stove, resisting the urges to try to get, make sure that I'm safe or secure. When we're able to resist those urges, it actually calms our brain down. We do get for a little bit more anxiety in that period of like we're not checking our news feeds, what something might be happening. We resist it. We breathe into it, allow ourselves to feel as we're feeling, wait till our scheduled news time. And when we do that, we're actually going to be making more room for rest and digest. So we're going to be tapping into that relaxation cycle. So definitely put news on a schedule. That's my recommendation.
That's good. Yes, and I also think about who I hear it from. I like listening to Gavin Newsom because he has information that affects me locally. And I really have noticed that there are certain people like someone in the White House who I can't listen to. My cortisol goes up immediately and I get pain in my stomach. So, you know, you have to pay attention to who you can hear. Let's take another call. We have Diana from Berkeley on. Hi, Diana. You're on About Health.
Hi. I love the way you put that about listening to that particular person, that your cortisol level goes up.
Yeah.
The great scientific description. I just thought I hadn't heard anybody. I missed part of it, but the show. But I hadn't heard anyone talking about being pissed off, and I'm finding myself pissed off almost all the time. It doesn't help that I have severe rheumatoid arthritis, and I can't get any treatment for it because the acupuncture clinics have been closed down.
Yeah. Right? They may be opening soon, by the way, Diana.
They're being opened in with mandates from the health department that make it toxic, basically. And they have to do this disinfecting and with toxic crap.
Okay. So you're very frustrated, and you're frustrated because also you're in pain. And mm-hmm. when we're in pain, our tolerance for frustration goes way down. And so let me see, since we just have a couple of minutes left here, if Jennifer has any suggestions to help people who are suffering, who are in pain, and how that cycle can really trigger a lot of strong emotions.
Right. Well, I can speak to just in terms of anger again. We talked about fight flight, right? The sort of avoidance of fleeing things that we're afraid of or fighting for what we need. And again, they're not bad things to experience. You know, anxiety helps alert us to danger, and anger can help us get our needs met. So it's really what's within our control and what's not within our control. One aspect is, okay, if we're feeling angry, but it's something that's not in our control, allow ourselves to feel the anger. Maybe even lie on the floor and, you know, kind of make our arms and legs go and say, okay, let me just give in to this anger. Let me feel this. And then knowing that it's okay to feel it, it's normal to feel it, and there still means that there's nothing we can do in the moment. And learning to kind of, how do we relax into that? But anger, just like any other emotion, we need to metabolize it. Or if there's problem solving to do, let that help be a motivation to actually do problem solving. But when we go to problem solving, we have to use our high brain, not our low brain, to do that. So not giving into urges, but really thinking through solutions.
Thank you. And thank you, Diana. And we won't be able to take any more calls. We're just about out of time. But I think in that regard, I just want to also put out there for Diana that it is a time to reach out to people to talk to when the frustration gets really high. And there are warm lines and hotlines and maybe friends or relatives to call and just say, I just need to talk about my frustration and maybe problem solve a little bit. You know, do I take that bath? Do I, you know, get the CBD oil that I need to rub into my, you know, knees or hands or arms or wherever I'm hurting? But don't hesitate to reach out to other people while you're feeling this kind of frustration. Jennifer, your website is jennifershannon.com, and I know there are some really good videos and lots of good information. A final word for our listeners from you, Jennifer?
Yes, I think the final word is that we're all in this together, that we are all a tribe, even when we see things differently, and that we're all experiencing a whole range of emotions. And the more that we can learn to really, again, using that word, of be able to tolerate the uncertainty, learning to rest and relax and really stockpile on the thing that's most important, which is flexibility and creativity, that's what's going to help us through this really challenging time. And we've done it before. We can do it again.
Thank you so much. And thanks for joining me and for all the work you're doing. I look forward to seeing your other books. And thank you to our listeners for joining us. Dr. David Feldman will be here next week. But in the meantime, you can reach me at my website at nurserona.com. That's NURSERONA.com. I'll make sure that link is working. You can listen to previous shows or any part of today's shows that you may have missed. I also want to thank Kirsten Thomas at the controls for being there for us today. And think about being as generous as you can during the upcoming fund drive that KPFA is going to have very, very soon. We know money may be tight for you, so just give what you can to KPFA so we can keep doing these shows. And may you all be healthy and live with as much ease as you can. Reach out to a friend or neighbor if you're feeling lonely. And this is Nurse Rona saying goodbye until next time. Thank you all for joining me.
Janine Etter, host of Upfront on Friday mornings. During this crisis, our listeners have rallied around KPFA. It is our mission to protect your health, wealth, and welfare. Because social distancing and shelter in place may hamper our upcoming fund drive, we've decided to get ahead of our spring goal instead of chasing it. Support our efforts by donating right now at kpfa.org. Help us build up an early lead, and we promise to cut days off of our May drive. Thank you.
You're listening to 94.1 KPFA, 89.3 KPFB in Berkeley, 88.1 KFCF in Fresno, 97.5 K24 8BR in Santa Cruz, and online worldwide at kpfa.org.